So, everyone, welcome to the March session of Masterclass. I am extremely excited to share with you all of the information you are going to be just you're going to be your mind's going to be blown today. We have Warren Whitlock with us today. Warren has a 250,000 Twitter followers. He has about, oh, I don't know, 220,000 more than me, which is pretty nice. And most of mine are bacon and pork suppliers because of my thirst for breakfast meat, so they're not even really qualified. But Warren has
Oh.
put together a fantastic presentation for you today. You can see it there on your screen, using influence to leverage your online marketing. Just a little bit about Warren. Warren and I have known each other for a couple years. We both contribute to the PubCon blog. We've spoken at many of the same conferences together. Warren always shows me a good time when I'm in Las Vegas. Besides being a Forbes top 10 social media power influencer, he's a best-selling author, publisher, author. I think I have one of his books, Twitter Revolution: How Social Media and Mobile Marketing Are Changing the Way We Do Business. He's a keynote speaker, an IBM futurist, an influence engineer, radio host, author, and we all know he's a cat lover too. So he has lots and lots of strengths. So without any further ado, we're going to go ahead and turn it over to Warren. Warren, it's a pleasure to have you this month. Take it away.
Well, great. Thank you for that introduction. I've never been introduced as a cat lover before. I'm as a cat blamer, yes, but yes, cats are a big part of my life and a very small dog right now. Yeah, most of the time I'm talking about influence and connecting, and there's two things that we all share that we're all looking for in life. That's connection and the ability to share stories. And it's the heart of what they call experience marketing, influence marketing, and social media, if actually commerce just done right. Content marketing without people is boring, and that's what we're going to cover today. I got asked to come on and talk about influence marketing. If you want some quick tips about how to do extremely well on Twitter, stop trying to sell stuff on Twitter. It will increase your sales, but not because you made an offer and somebody bought it. It's like walking into a cocktail party and saying, "Hey, who wants to come home with me?" It's just a little bit too brash of an approach to offer something for sale, and instead get to know people, get to know the people that can sell. And so, hey, reach out to me. I'm at Warren Whitlock on Twitter. Say hello. Tell me what was wrong with my presentation. Don't even talk to me if you don't want to. Tag me so I know that it came from you, and say, "Gosh, Casey is the greatest guy ever." And that's good too. Or we could talk about bacon. And let's see, let's get right into it then. This is why influence marketing is so good today. This is a number from Adweek and Social Times saying that for every dollar you invest in influencer marketing, you get back 650. That's for the big brands. I have just seen a study where it's 8 to 12 on the case studies that they were doing, and what it doesn't measure is the increased value of creating a relationship with people. And this is nothing new. Back when I got started, I used to sell radio advertising, sold some newspaper advertising in the small markets way back when, before most of you were born. And back in the day, we would survey people as to where they came from and what was their reason that they walked into the store. And number one always was word of mouth. A friend told them, like that. So the easy way to think about this is that if I can get you to say something nice about me, it's worth 5 to 10 times as much of anything else I can do. Better than a celebrity saying, "Go buy this." Better than having the best product in the world and a great ad campaign. Better than the Super Bowl. It's that did a friend tell me about it? Even a Super Bowl ad, if I get my friend, if a friend tells me I saw this great Super Bowl ad and can remember the brand, quite often They don't. And it's, I just saw this great brand. It's my favorite thing. This is what I use. That's more important to me than what I can get from any ad, any search engine placement or whatever. By the time you get to the search engine and search for something, you've already got your mind made up that you're going to buy and not buy or whatever. There are some times when we're lost and we go and use search. And that's why digital marketing's works so well, is because it's direct to the customer right when they need it. But what we've been missing is the tremendous amount of influence that comes from friends telling friends. So that's why influence marketing, it is actually how business gets done. So the purpose of today is to show you some things so you'll know where you're going, find out what works and what is not, and get us pointed in a direction where we can put together a program, even if it's just you getting yourself better known, and amongst your clients and potential clients, amongst your colleagues at work. Influence is everywhere. Whenever two people get together and have a conversation, something is getting sold. And we say sales, but anything that looks like sales is bad sales. So anything that looks like marketing is bad marketing. The more you can do to have a real conversation, you're going to find the people that are wanting something and anxious to do business with you rather than pushing something on. And of course, this applies to brands of every size. Like I say, personal, anyone who has ever witnessed this scene or been the adult in this scene knows what kind of influence any person can have. So what the studies show is that most of us, when we're online or using any sort of media in public networking, at work, whatever we do, we have some influence, but 80-90% of us don't do much of that. We lurk, we watch it. Then there's the 10% that are doing something and a 1% that are actually creating content and making things happen. And so what we try to do is focus on the most important. If you can go and buy media, you can get a celebrity to endorse you, you're in that 1%. The people that are sharing what things happen, what's big today, I just tweeted about March Madness and Reese's is pending money for that today. So I made a joke about reefer madness and how I thought Reese's was more appropriate for reefer madness than March Madness. But great, endorsed the brand, had some fun. And I did that because I thought it was funny. And I have a customer who is working on one of those things, but I found it funny just on my own. And it was just something that I want to post. Well, I'm somebody they would want to reach. Somebody else may be just sharing it. I find that the tweets that get the most retweets, the most likes on Facebook, the content that gets the most comments and gets the most action ends up being things where people can talk about it. So, I saw a note here about hashtags. Yes, by all means, tell people you're here, even if it's a private presentation. Tell the world what you're doing. They want to hear. And this is part of being a go-giver. This good friend of mine, Bob Berg, writes some excellent books on referral marketing and really gets the whole idea that our people are getting things done. The favorite book of his, The Go-Giver. It's a very short book. If you have not read it, sold a couple hundred thousand copies now at least. So find that book and read it. You can read it in an hour or two. It is just a fantastic story, and it tells you how things are really done in business, and really the go-givers are the ones that get things done. So, but all things being equal, and a lot of people have said this one, we're going to want to refer business, do business with people that we know, like, and trust. And so let's talk about that a little bit. To get to know somebody, that means you've got to have a presence. That's what building a website, having a digital presence, doing transactions online, all the kind of things, mobile marketing, it's all about getting there where so people who know you can find you. Then more important is that they like you. And the secret to getting somebody to like you is to like them. Be likable And so if you're telling somebody to like you, it's not going to work. If you're being likable, if you're liking other people, you're giving, you're just going to be attractive in everything that you do. And trust is built over time in a relationship. I'm saying some great things to you. I got Casey to endorse me at the beginning of the presentation, and I'm here in an authority space, and you're going like, okay, that Warren might know something. But over time, you can't trust me unless some time goes by. And over time, you become more likely to trust somebody that you hang out with. And it's amazing how fast that rapport can build if the time is invested in the relationship. And fortunately, we have tools today to keep that from being you have to go and play a round of golf with everybody you want to do business with. Though, you know, if that's available, by all means, take Casey out for an afternoon on the golf course. So let's talk about what we do. We start off by establishing some KPIs. That may be how many sales we get. It may be tracking a click through to a sale and finding out what's most effective, optimizing that way. But end of the day, what we want to do is find out whether or not saying something, listening to somebody, paying attention to them and building a relationship results in something that you can measure. And there's just, you know, a multitude of ways to things to measure. I got a couple listed on the next slide. But you want to plot some steps to make that happen. If you know that the way to Casey's heart is bacon, you make sure, you know, you tell him your best bacon joke, or, you know, show him a picture of the coffin made out of bacon that he might wind up in if eating too many breakfast meats. You know, joke about it, have some fun, be a friend, and sooner or later, you're going to establish some kind of a relationship. There's a path there. You know, if I know that if I go up to a party, go to a party and start saying to people, hey, buy my services and your sales will increase, I'm going to get like, you know, zero interest or negative interest out of that. But if I go up and say, tell me about what you do and act, and not act, but be interested in that person, find out where they're going, find some common ground like golf or bacon, and establish a relationship over time, that's going to work. This works person to person. Today, we have tools that just speed that up. So I always go back to what we were doing if we were standing together at a party. From there, if you can become a subject matter expert or a thought leader today and have a niche, it's great. If your business is, I do SEO and digital marketing and we build websites, there's a whole lot of people around the world that are doing that same thing, and a lot of them cheaper. If you become known as the person who does you know, SEO only for roofers, I have a client right now who does that. And if you want online lead generation and you're in the roofing business, he is the guy to go to. First of all, there's not a lot of competition there. Second of all, he's just taken what he's learned, what we all could do, and applied it to something, a market that he's passionate about and has had a very good ROI for him. So he's now working on, we're helping him get a book out for roofers about how to market your roofing business. And the next thing he's doing that I suggest to all of you is to build a tribe. This is why a mailing list is essential for everybody, no matter what business you're in. There are some insiders. There's those top 10% who really love sharing your stuff. And when you identify those, you want to stay in communication with them, whether that's conversations online in social media, email, mailing them a sample of your product, doing whatever. That's how you build community and build a tribe. And then, of course, as much as it's great to be able to talk to those people and give them your stuff, it's even more important to be listening. What kind of things do you need? And hopefully, we'll be done with the presentation here in a couple more slides, and we're going to hear from you and what you want to get, what kind of things would help you in your business? Because I'm guessing here. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to meet everybody that's here with us. So if you'll type in a question, we'll take them, and we'll discuss that as long as we can, and make sure that everybody gets an answer to their individual question. And to me, that builds a much stronger relationship than saying, "Hey, I know what you need. Here it is. Want to buy some?" And of course, you network with other tribal leaders. That's how I got here today. If I had not taken the time to get to know Casey, even though I am one of the oldest subscriber to SEN, I don't know that I would have ever been called on to do a webinar today. I get requests all the time from people that I know. I make what I do available. I help out. I network with other people, and then I get a chance to talk to their tribe. So thank you, Casey, for that. And then where influence marketing really takes fire is empowering influencers, where you can just pay or give goodies or do whatever you have to do to make the deal, so that podcasters, bloggers, people with large tribes, people with small tribes, can empower them to be able to tell their friends, tell their neighbors, and tell their large groups about what you do. And there's just really no limit to what we can see done. There's a Super Bowl ad you may have seen for a car company, and it involves a celebrity and talking about socks. And the deal for those socks was a deal put together through influence marketing, where there were thousands of people that got a pair of socks and were talking about them. And sales for the sock company are doing just fantastic. It really paid off when they got the celebrity to wear their socks on a Super Bowl ad. I follow the laws of persuasion. These are heavily researched, constantly reading about it. Dan O'Reilly is great with predictably irrational is a current series of books that he writes. The granddaddy of all this is Cialdini. Cialdini, Cialdini's influence book. My site for that is Yes 50 Book. I believe we were going to merge that with something else. So if it's not there, let me know, and we'll fix this slide the next time I use it. There are six principles of persuasion. Reciprocity means that you do something for somebody, they're going to be inclined to do that. You buy somebody a cup of coffee, they're going to reveal things to you and maybe buy from you later. Consistency means that you keep on what you're doing. You get to a small commitment, then a large commitment. Social proof talks about how me being on here, I've got more social proof that I am somebody. Other people saying things about it are very important in today's market. Liking, we talked about a bit, that's the idea of not, used to be taught as a salesman walking into an office and seeing a set of golf clubs and saying, "Hey, I bet you golf, I golf too. I just went out, blah, blah, blah," and tell their story. Liking is, "Oh, are you a golfer?" And if they tell you a story, you sit and listen. You become likable by listening to other people and then aiding them in whatever they do. And if you do play golf, then you send them an article about golf. And again, I use real world examples. I've been doing this since there wasn't an internet. The same principles apply even more so online. And these are things that have been measured and work. And I could do a presentation on any of the six by themselves. So we're just kind of talking about them. But if you have not read the book, Influence, the Psychology of Persuasion, do it, get it. Read it now. It's sold a couple of million copies, and Robert Cialdini, it's just fantastic. And make sure, whatever it takes, get a hold of me and I'll get you my interview with Bob. Anyway, authority is knowing that somebody is the authority on a subject, and scarcity is used. That's the one you keep seeing of, "We've only got 27 of these left." Be careful with that. Don't tell people you only have 27 copies of a digital ebook available, because we all know you're lying. That's the principles of persuasion, and happy to go into those. We have questions on that. Anyway, let's talk about emphasizing what we do want to count, not sales. It's the path that goes to a sale. It's how many people get introduced to you, how many people respond, filling out a form saying that they want help, how many people are reading a particular tweet, post, article, whatever it is, and then are they asking frequently that question? One of the biggest learnings I've had since I got rid of my brick and mortar business about 12 years ago, and that I wish I could go back and practice, was when somebody called my store asking for directions or what time we closed. That was a very strong buying signal, and we look at those as nuisance calls, and can we put them on an FAQ? We want people to be asking the very simple questions, because today the cost of answering those questions is so inexpensive, and the opportunity to step in and give some personal human connection is just great, because so many people don't do that. And when you're counting social media in any way, it's social, it's not media. Count engagements, count how many people you've talked to, how many people you've helped. And remember, you're not helping them by sending them a price list. You're helping them by giving them an answer to what they're asking about, and that's going to build the relationship that's going to make them want to buy from you. Don't treat your content like this. It's not a volume of content. I'm not the guy to tell you this, but definitely, if you're doing anything in SEO, you know that you can't just blast out content and post the same thing over and over again. It's going to work. Same thing happens in social media. We get people, just wanting to place their ad saying, buy me, buy me, buy me. That's not content. Content is something that is helpful to the person that's looking for it and engages them and makes them want to have a conversation. It's not a brochure. So I don't know about you, but I see either of these racks and I am worried, if not scared. Definitely I chose the IRS forms because anybody can identify that, but I feel about the same way about that other rack of brochures. Somebody that's looking for them is very much focused, very much ready to make a decision on something, but most of the time you're going to miss more people than you hit with that kind of information. And then what do you do with a brochure when you get done with it? You toss it away. Whereas if there was some opportunity to meet somebody, talk to them, get them engaged, it's just such a stronger relationship, or an opportunity to let somebody tell their friends and encourage that. So again, I started off with this, like to end with it, that everybody wants a connection. They want to connect with other people. They want to build a relationship. And the way we do that is through sharing stories. We're going to have a story, all of us here today, about how we spent this hour together. And most of what I've told you is stories from other things that I've done before. And that's how it's supposed to be. We want to share stories, family relationships, business relationships. The person you meet on the street and every one of your customers is a matter of sharing stories. Get to tell your story well, and everything will pass along. This slide. There we go. Let's skip that. Yeah. Basically, this is the old model. This is the 20th century model. Yell louder, more people can hear you. It doesn't matter how many ads you have, how many pages you have, how much you blast out a message. If what you're saying, if you're the only person that can say anything good about yourself, it's not near as good as having an army of people who are willing to say that they know you and they love you. Then it's all about building relationships. And I think we're nearing the end. A couple other things I wanted to tell you. Business is not an engineering challenge. That's something that I get a lot of times from somebody who's trying to make the transition from doing, SEO and content marketing into using influence. It's all about relationships. It's the handshake. It's not the wires. And we use the technology to do that. And all of the same optimization testing and everything works. It's just that it's the tip of the iceberg. Real business is done by real people. Even if it's major corporation buying for major corporation two, it's done with personal relationships. One more thing about networking. Notice everybody has influence in my network chart. Some go to the left, some go to the right. It is not just I'll tell one person and they'll tell two people and they'll tell two people. That happens. That's viral. That's wonderful. That's what we want. But we also know that if we can listen to two people, then they're going to tell us about three other people that we ought to listen to. We build a relationship, and pretty soon the whole world knows about us because we're listening and we're helping other people. It's just a network diagram. And let me say one more thing about your goals. That most of the time, the goals that we set out to do are not straightforward. We often try to say, well, what I need is the lowest cost for the lowest cost per lead, a great number of people reached, and things like that. Those are easy things to measure. But according to John Kay, highly recommend this book. Nothing changed my life in this decade more than reading Obliquity. And it's an economist out of the UK, and he says that almost always a good goal is going to be reached by taking an oblique path. In other words, most of the time we're off course and going someplace we didn't intend to. Like some of my presentations, but at the end, if you have the goal, if you know what the goal is and you're working towards that, that's okay. Some of the side trips and going off the path end up giving you the serendipity that leads to the biggest things ever. My largest client ever as a consultant was a very large online retailer that needed all sorts of help. I would have never heard about them if I had not gone to a cocktail party that I thought that I knew everybody there and didn't want to bother. I was tired. I don't drink. It was at a crowded location here in Las Vegas during CES. And I went there and I met one guy who later became my Facebook friend. And months later, he posted something. I responded to help him for free with an issue he was having. Next thing I know, he was helping this company where a relative worked. I got an introduction, and it was, you know, a cakewalk. I was brought in and, you know, pre-sold, and everything just was wonderful working on that account. And the reason why is because I took the time to, you know, talk to a friendly person I happened to be sitting next to, who was drinking a little bit less than the other people at the party. And so you don't know where you're going to get things. This doesn't justify spending all day on a golf course. And Casey has told us he won't go with us. You know, but you can do things.
As long as I can drive and drink the beer, I'm good.
Okay, good. You'll be my driver, my caddy, right? I don't know. I'm stretching because I don't play golf either. So, but if you want to go for a burger, Casey and I are open. Find us in the same city and buy us a burger. We're there. Okay, I want to share one tool that I have been paid to represent this company in the past. I'm not currently doing anything else with them, but I really like what they do, and I keep using their reports again and again. It's Finder. It's by the Bazool people, an Italian company, and it's so you go to Bazool, B-U-Z-O-O-L-E. I don't know two Z's. It's up here. We can see. Can you see my pointer? It's up in the upper left-hand corner of this slide. And Finder will just give you a list of the most influential people on any keyword. It's not the most accurate. There are other things that do better for the various channels, but it's a great way to get 300 people that are influencers in just about anything. So, and there's a whole bunch of tools like that, and I'm happy to answer any questions on those. So you find out what people want. You don't go in with a message of saying, here's what you get. You go, just like in sales today, the days of going door to door and trying to sell everything to everybody are gone. Now we find the people that are anxious to buy, and we help them do that. And they may not be anxious to buy. They may be anxious to solve a problem. They're calling it something else. Remember, any marketing persuasion that looks like marketing is third-rate marketing. The right way to do it is to actually help people be authentic, and it pays off. The ROI on this is just tremendous compared to anything else you do. I work less, get more done. Life is better because I have this attitude of two things. One is the serendipity that comes from taking the oblique path, and the idea of everybody needs something, help them get what they need, and they will give you anything that you want. And so do it in the right kind of format, where they are, where they're thinking right now. If they're thinking about buying something in 6 months, make sure that you're in that mode when you're talking to them and not trying to close them, you know, to make this month's numbers, and everything will go better. So, and this is a nice quote just to end on that we have, that, you know, it really a little thing. Sometimes saying thank you to people that retweet me has paid off to be bigger than just about anything. And sometimes I look at it and I go, like, this is just a name conversation and boring to do. But those short little two-word conversations I have with people, that's why I have 225,000 followers on Twitter as of today. And it's, you know, one at a time, taking care of them. Needless to say, 90% of them I've never talked to, but they saw this because I'm doing it in public. Okay, I'm ready for questions. What do we got, Casey?
All right, Warren, fantastic as always. We're going to go ahead and get in through it here. We're going to start with Michelle Grand. Michelle's been a longtime SEN subscriber. Michelle's question is, what is the best metric for measuring the ultimate value of social media when sales are rarely a direct outcome of engagement?
Okay, well, first of all, I'd be asking, what is the goal? Because any goal you have is something that you can apply this to. So if the goal is new dealers, new prospects, new, you know, you count them, and then you tie that back to what you're doing. I just barely talked to somebody who was another project I'm helping a client with. He is trying to build his speaking career. He's talking to a lot of big companies and not getting it. And what he needs is to appeal to the kind of people that hire them. He's got all of the people that come to what he does. Thousands of people see him, but really only a few people actually make the decision to buy. And so most of the time he's been working on trying to satisfy all of them. And that's what he tweets about and everything. But really he's got to find those finite people that are going to help him, network with them. And one connection could lead to the next $1 million in sales. So it's a matter of establishing your goal and going for it. Metric of how many followers you have is ridiculous. I do not get any more engagement on a tweet because I have 225,000 than if I had, you know, half that. I'm getting more in some places. I have a whole lot of lurkers that are following me. But, you know, and I don't know what my lurkers want. I just see that, you know, the demographics say they are above average in income and education, and that, you know, and most of what I do is about business and marketing. So I think I'm on the right track. But the only way I find out is to engage. So measure your engagement, go for more of that, and then listen to people, find out what they want. And that's something you can give them, whether or not that's selling them your product. Then you know you're headed in the right direction if those are the kind of people that will become your customers.
Very good answer. On a related note, since we're talking about engagement, is there a specific tool or tool suite that you personally use to measure your engagement? We seem to use, we do recommend the use of Sprout Social here. I know a lot of us use that. Of course, you know, Hootsuite and others exist. Yeah. Is there something specific that you like over anything else?
Well, Hootsuite and Sprout Social are great for listening and scheduling. Mm-hmm. Those kind of tools are. Personally, right now, actually, I just tweeted last night. I have just deleted Tweetbot from my iPhone. Okay. I did on the iPad some time ago. I use the native apps on iPhone and iPad. That's where I actually tweet and talk to people, reply. Because it's very versatile. And my favorite thing right now, I have to admit it, in the last couple of weeks, I'm really into animated GIFs. GIFs.
So you have a GIF, yeah. GIF keyboard and everything? You have all that?
No, it's built into the Twitter app right now. And it may be from some keyboard that I installed before. I really haven't researched how I got this, but I also have it when I'm replying to things on Twitter.com. And I use Twitter.com as much as anything, and I've always used just Facebook. I've never seen a tool that's better for posting to Facebook than just going on Facebook and being there. And now that's for me. I have a large, I'm an influencer kind of account. That's what I talk about. So all my planning, scheduling, everything I do is me being me. Very, very authentic and, of course, time-consuming. If you're doing this for one or more brands or accounts you work for, step one is do everything you can to get the people involved in doing it themselves. But step two is if your job is to speak on behalf of your employer or whatever, make it as personal as you can, and then look at the engagement. So analytics.twitter.com, or it's in the menus of analytics, fantastic information, real time. I can post a tweet, wait 2 minutes, and open up the analytics on it and tell whether I have a hit. I couldn't always do that. It took a little bit of practice to get to that point. But most of my tweets will get engagement within the first 2 minutes. And I tweet a lot. I use the same tweets over and over again because I know that people respond to them and they like them. And I'm getting new people. I get, you know, generally about 1% of my audience even sees a tweet. So I'm now planning them. And by the way, this is advice if you have 200,000 followers. It doesn't work if you're tweeting three times a day and just repeating the same tweets over and over again. But I engage all day long with people. I am the Twitter guy, wrote the first book about Twitter. So I'm on there, and I now schedule things like I would if I was scheduling a flight of radio ads, which is where I started, you know, 30 years ago. Was selling radio, and we would never just use one tweet one time. So I use the same content. I'll rewrite the tweet and use the same photo. And when I share something that's a news story, I'll share it at five or six different times in the day. And no, I can do that. I tweet 100 times a day.
Do you schedule a lot of those, Warren, or those are all live? How many of those are live, and how many do you schedule?
Well, first of all of the answering people is live. That's me. And then all of the, in fact, everything is me. I wrote everything. The repeat ones I use, it's a tool that you don't hear much about now. Social Oomph is what I'm using right now. I've used several others. Hootsuite's fine for this. Sprout Social, fine for this. Same thing, anything with scheduling. And if you're having an event, I was going along with the purists saying don't schedule anything. And, you know, when I wrote the Twitter book, I was living in a house by myself that summer, nothing else, you know, interrupting my day, spending 2-3 hours a day playing around with Twitter. Well, yeah, you know, and it was on and off, so it was throughout the day. So I was always there answering people and then sharing things. Then sharing became a lot more prevalent. Today, sharing and retweeting and likes, that's what the major brands are measuring, likes and retweets. And so I was getting lots of replies, but not likes and retweets. So I started focusing on that, and sure enough, those stupid quote cards work great. Those stupid quote cards, though, are quotes that mean something to me. I shared a Bob Berg quote here. That's something I would feel good about sharing anytime. People buy from those that they know, like, and trust. Something I teach all the time. Bob Berg is a good friend. I like promoting him, you know, and every time I post it, somebody just goes, wow, that just hit the nail on the head. And so that's what I go looking for, quotes, instead of, like, I didn't buy a quote service and then pump them out every 27 minutes, because that just makes you a quote site. But it's real. It's me. But yeah, that kind of cutesy stuff works. And I'm playing with animated GIFs right now. Frankly, I'm not holding out that they're going to work very well, but I'm looking at whether or not I can get somebody to retweet my answer to them. So I say thank you and post a picture of Jimmy Fallon saying thank you. And I'm getting people to retweet that. And I'm not really sure what effect that has in the overall engagement, but it's up in the last week. Maybe just because I'm trying stuff. But for the most part, yeah, I will. When I find a news story, I'll make sure that it has a photo, and I will put a tracker on it so I can track engagement there, whether it's mine or somebody else's. And then I will schedule that out so that it runs, every 4 hours for six times. And then I know it's run throughout the day, and kind of haphazardly. I don't try too hard to make those, you know, what is the best time with the most readers? Because, again, I am tweeting 100 times a day. The same with other social media. I found on Facebook that if I do something that's personal, if I change my profile picture and tell a story, that gets a lot more engagement. I was down in your neck of the woods, Warner Brothers store, took a picture of me standing next to Wile E. Coyote. boy, every time I change my profile picture to that, I'm going to get 50, 60 people telling me what a great shot it is. And I'm going like, great. Well, you know, I haven't been to San Diego in 2 years, but thanks for thanks for liking this picture. Again, I don't go with the purists. I go with what works. I try really hard to make it authentic, make it me. And so if I'm posting something that's 6 years old, I go ahead and tell people that's what it is. And it works just fine.
So on a related question here, you know, you kind of mentioned, you mentioned Facebook a little bit earlier. When we talk about, you know, social media across platforms, we had a question here about email. Can you email influencers if we've already primarily communicated with them just on Twitter or Facebook? Is that a kind of a, how would you do kind of the cross promotion there from your Twitter audience? Are you able to move a lot of those to other platforms that you interact on?
Well, and it's, the idea is you move it. Let's take you and me. You know, we met. We were both tweeting at the time because we were sitting in a conference.
Right.
From there, we exchanged information, and you know, you're my friend on Facebook, and I could send you an email. But most of the time when we talk, it's on Skype. Why? Because I found out you were on Skype a lot. So if I really needed to get a hold of you, I'd go to Skype. You know,
absolutely.
And I would assume that's probably for business daytime. And if I'm in San Diego and want you to buy me a burger, then I might try Facebook. And
yeah,
it's really individually known people.
Or just text me, man. You could just text me. I know. Hard to believe.
And if you want to pick the one that's hardest to get me engaged, it's text. Because I'll answer your text, but it'll annoy me because I'm probably sitting at my computer doing it in the Google Voice app. And usually I write pretty well there. But if I get into a long conversation on text on my phone, guaranteed we're going to have words that just don't make any sense at all that my spell checker stuck in there. And, you know, I'm just an old man with fat thumbs and can't see the screen. But for some reason, doing that on Twitter works. I don't know if it's the text is larger or what. I get away with it on Twitter and even Facebook now with my phablet.
Hashtag fat thumbs on that, folks. That's what you take away from that conversation.
Well, so you find out where somebody is and use the technology to get a hold of them. For instance, if I'm coming to San Diego, I'm going to call you. I'm not going to call you to tell you that I'm going to Tennessee and you might be at that party. It's possible you might be, but I'm gonna go looking for you where you are. And if you use text, I know I can send you text and you're gonna answer. Most people are reachable by text. I just happen to be anti-text. I call it tweeting to one person. So same with DMs, you know, I want everything to be public and out there and let the whole world know what we're doing. So, and that's me, but I found that it's the relationship's much more important than the platform. And so, you know, talk to your audience and what they want. I know that if I post all the articles I post on Twitter, on LinkedIn, they're going to get a little bit of engagement, but that even something I want to get a lot of engagement with is a little bit of engagement on LinkedIn for me. And on Facebook, some things are going to get engagement. And then I think about that. I don't post something on Facebook that I'm not going to get a conversation going on. You know, why bother? And the latest thing I'm playing with in Facebook for the last 6 months or so is giving up on any kind of ranking for me. I got rid of a couple of thousand friends that were just there for contacts. I've turned down, you know, it's probably 10,000 friend requests by now, but I'm down. I have about 3,200 friends on there. I don't go looking to make that number 5,000 so that I look like I'm a powerful influencer. What I do, and I don't post stuff trying to get engagement. What I do is I go and help somebody else out. So I post a thoughtful comment, sometimes 3 and 4 paragraphs in a comment, because I think I can help. And I get deeper engagement there because I'm adding to somebody else's conversation. Same with blog posts. My theory is if I've got time to read your post, I've got time to leave a comment. And so I'll just read less until I can get it down to a number I can comment on everything. And I want to add to the conversation. And if I can help, like I've been talking about Bob Berg today, if I can help Bob, I will. I'll share anything that I find from him. His stuff's always good. And I know that he knows when I'm retweeting and talking about stuff. And if I ever need a favor from Bob, it's there. But I don't need to ask for a favor. I know Bob someplace, somewhere, probably as we speak, is telling some. The last time I did this and talked about Bob, I ended up contacting him and telling him I talked to him about him in a presentation, and he came back and said nice things about me publicly, and and I know he's getting that all the time, and I realized it doesn't matter. I don't need to figure out a tactic to get Bob's attention. I'm doing it because Bob's a good friend and I really like what he does. I would do the same for you, Casey.
And I appreciate that. So on that note, I mean, one of the main things that we always get asked, whether it's, you know, here at Search Engine News or at conferences, or many of the people on the call today get asked by their clients, is just, you know, they want to grow their Twitter following. And we've covered some of those tactics today. You're very big on, you know, retweeting, but, you know, several times a day, leaving valuable feedback, adding hashtags, scheduling retweets at the right time. I mean, people know that stuff, but is there one really, you know, we all want to add value, but there's got to be, if it was that easy, Warren, we would all have 200,000 followers. So what do you think it is?
I've been at it a long time, and I'm an old man without a life. So, you know, I do put a lot of time and effort into, you know, but it is people. And I know that you have a following. And so when I become your friend, I'm getting the attention of other friends. There's one Twitter user, which I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. He's Alphabet Success, just like it sounds. Name, Alphabet Success. And his name is Tim Fargo. And so, you know, I've done a radio show with him and some private stuff. He's a guy who sold a business for a healthy sum, I think 8 figures. And got married to somebody in Romania and lives there. It may not be Romania. It's some Eastern European country. And he travels the world. And sometimes he's in the U.S. and sometimes he's other places. He's a guy from New Jersey. He's interesting, just down-to-earth, great guy. And he's really gone crazy with it. He has a share the quote, one of those services. And so, you know, I don't agree with that. But with some of his practices, you know, where they stick their... that where somebody sticks their website label on everything that they tweet for you, you become an advertiser for them. But I really liked him, and the way I got to know him is a mutual friend introduced me in a tweet, and we started talking, and I just found that this guy goes out of his way to do nice things. If I share something with, I get him. Another one guy big in the creative real estate stuff, and I went to see him speak in the 80s. And I thought, you know, this guy's a big wheel, and he does, you know, huge things. And now he calls himself $10 million man or something like that. Okay. And I don't know anything about his business, but I recognize his name. And so he started sharing a couple of my quote cards things. And so I engaged him in conversation. Next thing I know, I've got a friend. And I noticed that when he retweets something, I get conversations. You know, the people that have to pick apart the quote and say, well, that's true, but... there's a theory. Anytime a tweet says it's true, but you know that they didn't mean the it's true part. negate everything before the word but. And so, you know, and I engage those people all the time because I find that conversation whimsical and fun. But to learn about stuff, but I get so many more of those when he tweets something because his followers are very much looking at him as a hero. And so I engage with the people like that. Tamara McCleary is another one like that. Tamara McCleary, like it sounds, McCleary. Tamara McCleary, one of the most engaging people I've ever met. We're big time friends, and it all came from, actually it was Facebook, but it is all came from mutual respect and saying nice things on each other's. She was posting pictures for a while of clouds. She's on a plane a lot, and she likes to take pictures of the clouds.
Okay.
And I made a joke about it, and I realized that wasn't the tone of the relationship I wanted, so I started thinking of nice things to say. Next thing you know, we're like, you know, best friends. And then I, for a while, was quoting something as my motto for last year, which was most people go through a life asleep. Those that wake up are in a state of total, constant amazement. She's the only person in the hundreds of times I shared that who I had a serious conversation with about it. So anyway, you know, we're very good friends. She lives on a farm with her husband and kid in Denver. You know, I'm in Las Vegas. We have met up in person one time. Where we were both at an IBM event. And other than that, I just watch what she's doing. But yesterday, out of the blue, she retweeted something and put a comment on it and, you know, made my day, because this is somebody that's got 100,000 followers who likes me. How could I not like that? We want to do business with people we know, like, and trust. So if you're on Twitter trying to figure out which tweets are going to win, stop. Just go in and be helpful to other people. I have a list that's private. I don't share it with anybody. I call it my, I call it KP, and I can't even remember what that's. I think key people at the time, or it might have been clout, because it's years and years old. and I went and saw people that had high clout scores or a lot of followers or whatever. There's some tools now that'll do that for you. But then I'm using OneCube right now. You know, contact me if you'd like to find out about that. It's great for real-time stuff and some research, and then finding influencers. It's my favorite tool right now. It's in beta or private. I don't know how it works.
Gotcha.
Let me know if that's what you're looking for. And anyway, I find the people that are the superstars and top Twitter users there. Then I find reasons to help them. Retweet, answer a question. And it goes way back to, I had a keyword name when I started on Twitter, and Guy Kawasaki asked a question, and I answered it. And I felt so dumb, you know, putting my keywords as the person that was answering his question. And he didn't mind, but it bothered me. So I changed it to my real name. So I credit Guy for that. And then I started, you know, answering every time he had a question. Today, he handles his account differently, but back then, I got to meet him. I met great author Tom Peters, author speaker. He's Tom_Peters. People that I've met and can help, Brené Brown. I can't remember how you pronounce her name. Anyway, one of the most famous TED Talks ever. I saw her TED Talk, bought her book, read it, wrote a review on it, stuck it up, and she answered, "Why are you following me?" And so it didn't work out. But other ones, most of the time, if I see a talk I like, a blog I like, I just go and reach out and start a conversation with the person. And isn't that so cool? Used to be I go to the bookstore, buy a book, and think, I'm not going to ever talk to the author. But today I can. And they're not talking to me because I'm famous or somebody. No, they're talking to me because I actually pay attention and leave a thoughtful comment.
Right. And on that note, let's talk about that a little bit, because Heather has a really good question here, and we'll end on that today. She says there's a lot of noise about stagnated growth on the Twitter platform. And, you know, there's a lot of people who say Twitter is dying. What is your response to that?
Most of them aren't using Twitter. So here's what happens. You go and you use something, you know, it's somewhat faddish. We get on these things, we try them for a while, and we move on to the next thing. Right? Mm-hmm. People say the same thing about Facebook. They've even said it about Instagram, which I don't quite get. And it's not about growth. There are 300 million people using Twitter every day. I have tons of conversations every day. It's not the same people it was 5 years ago. Some come and go. Some people, like I know you and I will talk when you're in Las Vegas. You're here for PubCon, and we have a couple of conversations. I see you sharing stuff about the event. I retweet it. We do that, and I don't know if that constitutes you using it a lot more, because, frankly, I can't pay attention to everything that you tweet. Right. But it comes and goes in waves, so there's a whole lot of people. It tends to be the people that are speakers in the industry and things like that. If they use Twitter, it'll be when they're in the right town. And I'm just amazed that anybody who, you know, wants to become a thought leader isn't at least active enough on Twitter that they can, you know, that it's getting checked continually and look for conversation. I've had great leads. I've had customers come from using Twitter. Most expensive time I ever sold my time for was a guy that tweeted and said he wanted to pick my brain. And I laughed and told him to send me an email. And the next thing you know, he paid me $1,600 an hour for the hours I spent with him.
Goodness.
And it came from me just being available and talking to the guy. Yeah, so.
Gotta love it. You know, if they'll pay it, you'll take it.
Yeah, it pays for itself. I would not be on social media doing all the silly things that I do. As much as I enjoy it, I wouldn't be there if there wasn't a business. I could turn it all off and go have a good life just fine without it. I'm not addicted. I'm there because it's my bread and butter. It's how I make money.
And on that note, Warren, if you could just give our audience one takeaway today. I mean, we've already There were so many, it's hard to nail it down. But if there was one thing you'd like everyone on the call to remember today, what would that be?
If you want to get more out of life, give more. It's never about what you need. And boy, I live with this all the time. I'm a consultant. My income goes up and down. There are times when I think, like, what was I thinking? I'm going to be totally out of money in 2 months, and will life go on? And when I get in that kind of mood, I always remember there is somebody out there who is very anxious to hear my message and what I have. There's somebody I can help. There's somebody I can do a service for. And if it just means I'm going to go take out the garbage when it's not my turn, there's always somebody that you can help in some way. And karma works. Do it. You know, just keep giving and expect that serendipity. Do read that obliquity book, man. Change your life. When you realize that all this planning, research, project management stuff that, you know, all good, but all nothing compared to the idea of just being open for opportunity and to help other people.
Fantastic, Warren. And on that note, everyone, thanks so much for attending this conversation today with Warren Whitlock. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at Warren Whitlock, or you can visit him at socialmediateammanagement.com. Warren, exceptional pleasure as always. I will see you, if not in Vegas for PubCon Las Vegas. I'm certainly, hopefully I can see you before then, but it's always a pleasure, man. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, I'll be down in San Diego looking for a burger soon.
Awesome. I will be here. Any excuse to get out of the office is a good one. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right, everyone, we'll go ahead and turn this off for now. We will have the transcript and everything up very quickly. I believe it was within less than 24 hours. Last time, Crystal might be able to chime in with a projected deliverable on that, but we'll have the recording and everything up so that you can browse it at your convenience. And again, you know, we want to have as much interaction on these as possible. So we didn't have a lot of questions today. Hopefully that was just an anomaly. We want to have more questions on these. We want to make sure that you come in knowing that these are people that you're not going to see outside of conferences very often. So we want to really get the number of questions up. We can try, you know, to help as much as we can, but this is a resource for you. So if you are concerned about your own Twitter following has stalled, you're not sure how to take it to the next level, maybe you've been hired by a client or an agency or a company to build their Twitter following, this is an opportunity. We want you to take these lessons and apply them directly. So just be aware that, you know, that's what we want these conversations to be about. So just a quick reminder that our next presentation is going to be with Melissa Foch. She is with SEO Aware. She's also with PubCon. She's the community manager at the PubCon conference. She also works with several other companies, many too many for me to list today. And she's going to be presenting on community building next month, and we will have that date with you very shortly. So on that note, again, thanks so much for giving us your hour and so on this Thursday, and we'll see you on the forum and we'll see you on chat. Thanks so much for your time. Take care.